I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Is there a motion for the minutes of April 25th, 2018?
Move to approve.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
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 All opposed, motion carried. Comments from the public? Seeing none, public health in action. Take it away, sir.
Good morning, counselors. For the record, Dr. Alan Melnick, public health director. So we wanted to give you an update. There's been some information in the news lately about a TB case at Skyview High School. So just wanted to give you an update on where we're at on that. So we were notified about the case, we're not saying publicly whether it's staff or student or anything like that, because we're trying to protect privacy as much as we can, and we want to make sure that we protect the public, but we give out the information that's necessary to do so. So we were notified about the case on May 1st, and of a possible case on May 1st, and was confirmed on May 7th. And since then, we've been working closely with the school district and the school to identify anybody who might have had contact with this case. The case, we believe, TB is a slow-growing kind of indolent infection, and you can have symptoms over a long period of time. We believe the case might have been infectious from July 1st of 2017 through the time where they were identified in early May. And the case is being treated now, and that's being taken care of. So we had a long period of time when this person could have been contagious. And the fortunate thing about TB is that, unlike measles or influenza, it's not as contagious. It's spread through airborne, but it's not as contagious as those diseases are. And It really takes being in a kind of a closed environment over a period of time to really be more at risk for the infection. I mean, household members, obviously, most at risk. So what we do in these investigations is we talk to the person, their family, whatever. We're trying to find out exactly where they may have been, what they've done over the period of time that they've been contagious, who they hung out with, you know, what those settings were. And we identify people who might have been exposed. And we work really, some of these are, you know, staff and students in the school. So we work closely with the school to help us identify, you know, locations where this person might have been. And then we go ahead and notify people who might have been exposed, which we're in the process of doing. We've identified associated with the school, and there's some other places we'll be looking at as well where this person was. But a little bit over 300 people who need to be tested at the school. That doesn't mean they're risk. We sent letters some to the parents. I believe we did emails as well. So we want to make sure we contacted everybody. I don't think first of all, the risk to the general public, because this is a disease that's pretty hard to get, is virtually nil. You know, and even the risk to the folks in the school that this person had contact with is fairly low, but it's not zero. And we feel they should be tested. So we're arranging, either we're going to do it in clinics that we're setting up, or some people are choosing to go to their own doctors, and we'll get those, you know, we're offering testing to those 300 people. Depending on the results of the test, most of them, I would suspect the vast majority, if not all of them, unless the person has other risk factors for TB, I think they'll be negative. But if they are positive, we will do an evaluation, or we'll recommend an evaluation and make sure that they get the appropriate treatment. The other thing I'd mention about TB, and I can wax eloquently about TB for a long period of time, is that if you do get infected, if you breathe in the germ and you get infected, you generally don't get sick right away. In fact, 9 out of 10 people who get infected don't ever get sick at all. The bug just kind of lives in their body. We call it latent TB infection, and they never get sick. In 1 out of 10 people who get infected, over a period of time, and it doesn't happen right away, the germ begins multiplying and causing a more serious infection, And that's what we call active TB, and those folks would need to be treated for that. But we will be doing and recommending and making sure those evaluations happen for anybody who tests positive. We're also, so on May 11th, we sent a notification letter to all the parents, so they've all been notified. And on May 15th, we sent a second letter. So we sent a general letter on May 11th, said we're doing this. You will hear from us if your child might have been exposed. And on May 15th, once we had the names of people, kids who we thought might have been exposed, we sent a specific letter to parents letting them know that their child needed testing and how to get tested. We don't have any evidence of an outbreak, and as I mentioned, the risk to the public is low. We're going to try to quantify this as much as we can because we've been before you to talk about foundational public health services and adequate funding for public health to protect the public, and we'll be trying to keep a record of what goes into this. It's pretty labor-intensive, as you can imagine, going through the rosters, going through the list, identifying folks, getting them in, getting them tested. So we'll be keeping close dibs on that. So that's ongoing, and we'll keep you posted as it goes along.
So I do have a quick question about this. So as people are tested, can you tell, is it still skin prick?
That's a really good question. Skin test is still done, but we're mostly going to be doing a blood test called the QFT. And the reason we're doing this, there's a trade-off. The blood test is a bit more expensive, but for a skin test, you have to plant it, and then you have to read it in 2 or 3 days. And one of the concerns we have is we're getting close to summer. We're actually going to have to do 2 rounds of testing. And the reason for that is it can take up to 8 weeks after your last exposure to test positive. So we want to test people now, and then remember the case was still at the school until May 1st. We're going to want to test people a second time 8 weeks after May 1st. So the reason we're doing the blood test is you don't have to come back to read it, and we're concerned we don't want to lose anybody. We don't want to plant a bunch of tests and then, you know, the kids don't show up, especially as we're getting closer, especially with the second round when we're leaving for summer. So, and it's less labor-intensive, you know, it's a blood test, so it's just a needle stick. So we're going to be doing mostly blood tests.
So everyone who has been exposed to TB and their body, and it maybe doesn't become embedded, but their body builds up antibodies. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, it does become embedded because what happens is when you breathe in the germ, it gets into your airways, and then it goes through what's called the lymphatic system all over your body. But there's very few bugs, and they just mostly sleep in the body. Your body builds up an immunity around them and walls them off. For a variety of reasons, including people who have immune deficiency, 1 out of 10 people, the germs will start growing again. But you're absolutely right. So your body kind of controls it.
So what I'm thinking is even if you get a positive test result, you won't know that that's the result of this exposure. Somebody could have had a previous exposure.
That is absolutely correct. But most people, most of us growing up in, being born and growing up in the United States, do not have other exposures.
I see.
So that's what, some of these kids may have risk factors. If they're born in a country which has a high rate of TB, they may have a positive test based on that. Which I know I can speak eloquently about this. The other thing I want to mention is one of the advantages of the blood test for people. So in developing countries where TB is really common, they give a vaccine called BCG. BCG doesn't prevent you from getting TB. It prevents really invasive TB like TB meningitis, and that's why it's used. We don't use it here. That can give you a positive skin test, but it won't give you a positive blood test. So that's another reason why. Were you going to add
that? No, that was the connection I was trying to get. Thank you.
So that's another reason for doing the blood test. But
thank you.
I have one quick question.
Yeah.
So you said that, excuse me, this was kind of traced back to July of 2017. What was the process in determining when he or she or the person actually was infected or was exposed? And how did you get that potential time frame?
Well, most people, when with TB, it's not, because it's not really common, it's not suspected. And so until a healthcare provider began to suspect TB and do the test for it, it was recognized. I mean, TB is slow growing, and you can have fairly vague symptoms. Like some of the symptoms are, weight loss over time, night sweats. You might have a cough, but it's not. People don't always recognize it right away, and people don't always go to the doctor right away because it's kind of a slow growing.
So it was diagnosed in May, correct?
Correct.
And I'm just curious as to how they got to July of 2017 in terms of that's...
There were symptoms going back.
Okay.
So here's the other thing we do. To be careful, and we want to make sure we identify anybody who might have been exposed, and these are the CDC recommendations, we do extensive interviews. We find out when symptoms began. If it's pulmonary TB, when did they start coughing? Okay. And then to be careful, we actually go 3 months before that. So if the symptoms started in October, then we go back to July if that makes sense.
Yes, that makes sense, yeah. And then I don't know what work is done around, certainly you're doing work around who this person might be infecting potentially, but any work done on how he may have been or she may?
We always ask those questions. So we always look for these cases to see where they might have contracted it. The other thing that we sometimes do, well, we always do is, we test the folks, we do kind of like concentric circles, so we test the people who are most closely associated with this person, and then depending on the results of them, we might go out to the wider ring. So right now we're using this ring about people who might have had exposure at the school and other places, other close contact with this person might have been. I honestly don't think we're going to have much. I think we're being overly... I wouldn't say overly. I think we're being cautious about it.
Cautious, yes.
But doctor, when you say we, who is we?
What we're doing, the Clark County Public Health Department.
And who in public health? How many?
Our staff, you mean?
Yeah.
So our communicable disease staff, so we have a couple of epidemiologists and several public health nurses.
Okay. So I bring that up because... Councillor Quirin and I was at WASAC conference, and foundational public health is the top three items we are going to bring to the legislature. Well, this is foundation. Sometimes people have questions, what is foundational public health? Well, this is foundational public health. I mean, and we have spent a fair amount of funds and time and money into this.
Yeah, depending on how many of these you have, this is
very
underfunded.
Important.
We are looking at doing for another site, which I won't mention in terms of where this person might have been. We're looking at using what we call incident command and our preparedness folks to kind of help with the logistics and organizing that as well. So we bring in other folks and surge capacity.
So I'm just asking for things like this that you capture kind of it, so when we go to the ledge, we have examples.
That, yes, thank you on that. So that's sort of, we're going to try to capture the FTE, what it took, and all the costs. Yes.
Okay.
We can bring that back to you. Thank you for asking that, because that's exactly what we want to do.
I have a question. Are you aware of any other tuberculosis cases in the region?
Oh, yes. We have. There are several cases that we're following.
Not just Clark County.
The entire state. We have. I don't know that there's any cases in Skamania or Cowlitz right now, but.
I heard a radio advertisement this morning that a caregiver in Providence Hospital had tuberculosis, and they are giving free tests for tuberculosis. So are you not aware of that?
Providence.
In Portland?
I don't know. I assumed it was Multnomah County.
Yeah, I'm not aware.
Would you? Okay. I thought that was pretty coincidental that here we have that case, and they are giving free tests at Providence because of a caregiver.
So, and so what we've had that happen here, and we've had caregivers and our at our healthcare partners, and generally what happens in that case, if it's at a caregiver at a hospital, the hospital itself, because they're employees, they will do the, we work with them. We don't go in there and do the test.
Right, of course.
The hospital will. Yeah. That's happened a number of times here.
Yeah, and I mean, it was interesting. I mean, they're saying anybody who was there and to come for free tests.
A few years ago, we had a, we actually published it in the Journal of the American Dental Association. You guys may remember, we had a dental hygienist with active pulmonary TB who was working for 7 months, and we had to do, we did that investigation. So yeah, you know, caregivers are more have risk factors because
right.
they can get exposed.
Yes, absolutely, yeah. absolutely. Yep. So, and I would say too, this is when you have to control diseases and you have to act quickly, it's definitely a foundational issue, foundational public health for sure.
Okay.
Okay, next up on the agenda is we're going to have Jill Krumloff, our environmental outreach specialist with the Green Neighbors Program, is going to be talking about the Recycled Arts Festival that's coming up. And we figured this would be a good time to get the information
Perfect.
Out there.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
My name is Jill Krumloff. I'm with the Green Neighbors Program. And I'm here to talk about the Recycled Arts Festival. Switching gears just a little bit.
Get to the happy stuff.
So the Recycled Arts Festival is in its 13th year, and it's held the last weekend in June downtown at Esther Short Park. Sorry, excuse me. Is it down? Okay. Ah, there we go. The festival brings between 35,000 and 40,000 visitors each weekend, and it's the largest event in Vancouver. The reason the festival began was to inspire and educate the public about ways they can reduce and reuse and just create less waste. We have about 150 recycled art artists each year, ranging from metalwork to woodwork, jewelry, clothing, toys. Garden art. The festival also has a range of entertainment, from kids' crafts to stilt walkers, performers. And then we have our green booth, which showcases our four green programs, which are Green Neighbors, Master Composter Recycler, Green Schools, and Green Business. And this is really our opportunity to speak to the thousands of Clark County residents who come and visit about waste reduction, composting, recycling. We rely heavily on our volunteers. We have usually about 100 to 125 volunteers each year, with over 500 volunteer hours, I believe. And without them, the festival couldn't run. And each year, people mark where they're from, and the majority, the high majority, is from Clark County. So that's a big plus, that we're actually reaching people in our area, which is our goal. We have a lot of partnerships with nonprofits. We open up around 10 to 12 tables where they can come and showcase their own nonprofit. Habitat for Humanity, Master Gardeners, Stream Team, Urban Forestry are just a few. Tossman Found is the Waste Connections tent, and they have items from the landfill that were gleaned, that were just tossed, and they could have been reused. So it's really cool for people to see what people are throwing away that they don't need to throw away. Last year, we had our first annual Procession of the Species, and that was a parade celebrating art, the community, and wildlife or nature.
What did you call it? Procession of the Species?
It's called the Procession of the Species. And it was originated in Olympia, Washington, I think about 25 years ago, for the Endangered Species Act and Earth Day. And so a lot of places around the world have adapted it mm-hmm. as their own and created their own procession. So we had workshops to create masks and costumes, and then we closed off a couple streets in the area near the Hilton. This year, we're just having the procession in the park, and so we'll have a few more people watching. Last year, we had a low turnout for people actually watching the parade.
What time is the parade? Can you go back?
11 o'clock.
Can you go back one slide?
Yeah.
I have another question. It's 11 o'clock on Saturday?
Sunday.
Sunday.
11 o'clock okay. on Sunday.
And then is the unicorn, is that an endangered species?
It is. And there's two there, so they're well represented. So on Sunday, actually, we have Recycle Man playing, which is Pete Dubois, our master composer recycler. And after him is Portland Tyco, and they'll lead right into the procession at 11. So it'll be an energetic Sunday morning. So if you come down, I would recommend coming down on Sunday. So new this year is the Repair Cafe, and we'll have a table up on 8th Street where they'll be demonstrating some repairs. People can bring certain items. We haven't decided quite yet, but people can bring down items, and volunteers will fix them for free, kind of showing people what they can do instead of throwing something away. They can repair it.
That's great.
Also new this year, we'll have the Falconer both days, and he will be talking about wildlife conservation and how our habits affect these large birds of prey. We'll have owls and vultures and some falcons on display. So the festival is the 23rd and 24th, 9 to 5 and 9 to 4 this year.
I got an email. Did I get an email from you asking if we wanted to volunteer? Or
that was probably from our department, yes.
From your department?
Yep.
Okay. So just fill that out and you'll put
us
somewhere.
Go ahead and click the link on sign up, and then you can choose your shift.
Okay. Put you in the compost section.
Compost? Oh, yeah. Okay. Tromp it down.
Are there any questions? I have a couple other events coming up.
Yeah, I have a question on these.
Sure.
On these birds.
Yes.
Do you cover what wind turbines do to kill birds?
I'm sure that he discusses that.
Good.
Yes, it's an important issue. I actually worked as a wildlife biologist, and I conducted a lot of surveys on wind turbines.
Mm-hmm. Thanks.
Okay.
And one more time on the procession, Sunday morning.
Sunday morning, 11 o'clock.
Okay.
Yep. We'll have a news release coming out soon, too.
Okay.
Yep. Also coming up, we have... This Saturday, we have an author talk at Vintage Books, and the Green Burial Guidebook by Elizabeth Fournier, also called The Green Reaper. We'll be talking about her guidebook. It's really interesting. You want to be friendly on your wallet and the earth. It's a good guide for end-of-life options.
Oh, so I'm this curious. Is separate.
That is, yes.
I couldn't figure out how the two mix.
Sorry, so yeah, just another event coming up.
So I'm wondering, is she promoting burying your loved ones in the backyard? Or
that's,
she may, maybe. I'm not sure. I know that she...
Is that legal?
No.
I don't think so.
Yeah. Only if you murder somebody, I guess. You don't want to hide the body.
That's not legal.
According to the mystery movies I watch.
So is this her picture?
In
the backyard?
Just, oh, yeah. Yes.
It's well, don't show it to my wife and kids.
Looks like a joke, but... I thought it might be about pets. No, I'm reading.
Area in the backyard.
Yeah.
It's about people.
In the backyard?
I'll find out and report back to you.
All right, thank you.
And burials at sea.
Is that right next to the cat?
And then our next event is the Natural Gardens Tour, which is July 15th. And that's where regular people open up their homes to show how you can actually garden at home without the use of... And
this is a pretty good success. I mean, you have a lot of people interested.
Yes, it's a very popular event.
Right.
And it's incredible to see what you can do from just a small urban backyard to a couple amazing biodynamic kind of farms.
I have a fiscal question.
Sure.
What does it cost the department to put on this recycled arts festival?
So I don't have the exact number, which I can get to you. I think it's about $50,000. And then we have sponsors, which I actually forgot to mention. We have 7 sponsors, including a presenting sponsor, and that ranges between $15,000 to $17,500 in sponsorship. We also charge booth fees to the artists and the food vendors, and that also subsidizes it, so that will take it down around $30,000.
Okay, so.
So those are just some rough numbers, but I'd be more than happy to provide you some solid
numbers. That's fine. Rough numbers are fine.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's all we have, so.
I just have a question if we have time. Since we're doing the long-range plan of garbage, okay, recycling, solid waste, you know, is the technical term. So a lot of, and there's a lot of counties, you know, this is really recycled, the price of recycled goods. We're doing it in our budget to some degree, you know. I think it would be good to get a handle soon where we're going on this and kind of what's going on. I think it'll, not now, but.
At another board meeting?
At another board.
Yeah. We have our Director of Environmental Health here and person who runs our solid waste program manager. I think we can do that.
So do we have any this Recycled Arts Festival is fascinating for so many different reasons. And people really enjoy it. And even if you've been there once, you really want to go every year. So is there a place on our website for Clark County that we can have like a notification page that this is coming up? This is a fun event, and people learn through that fun. But this really is a kind of community service because it's reducing waste, it's reusing, and what's our third R? Recycling. And Clark County has a very high recycle rate. It's a voluntary recycle rate. Or voluntary recycling, we have some of the most participants, and people really are recycling. And it's true, Mark, that in the recycling, those selling the recycled goods, it's a market, and that market kind of comes and goes, and there are some issues with that right now. But for the most part, it's a valuable program, so.
Thank you. I think, I don't know if the banner on the website does have, on the main website, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll have the main website, not just the public health website.
Because I don't think a lot of people connect public health with an art festival.
Right. I think it is on the main website.
Right. So I hope it is.
Yeah, we'll have it on the main county site, yes.
So I'm curious, Chair Bolt, what were you asking for?
Just really the update on recycling, thing of the future of recycling in the county where we're going, if our fees have to go up to recover it. I know one of the things is, you know, the fair has been a huge recycle person. You know, we've done a lot. But if there's no market for that, it ends up costing money than, you know. And so, kind of affects our county, but, you know, we're going through the same thing. It's hard discussion.
An antidote on that is in the garbage bill for county facilities. We received a notice that our rates would go up because of our recycling program just for county government. The market has changed, and they're just not getting the income from the recycled material, so the cost of the effort, they're raising rates. And so the question of what's the future of recycling in county facilities, you know, you have to weigh kind of the public benefit and is it worth, you know, paying another $50,000 a year in fees to continue to do that.
Is this part of the issue with China, buying?
Yeah.
Actually, I think our waste that goes to China from here is a little bit better quality than what's coming out of Portland.
Absolutely.
Yes.
I'm sure it is.
Are we down to like 1% Yeah, you could. I mean, we have a lower contamination rate in our.
Yes.
Travis can explain that to you.
So for the record, Travis Dutton, Solid Waste Program Manager. I can give a high-level synopsis. The numbers change very, very quickly. But what I can give you as an update is that we are, and I say we, when I say we, I'm talking about Waste Connections, our program, as well as the people that broker the materials that we collect. They've made some significant changes to the way we're processing materials. So when we talk about contamination, there's a couple of different ways we can be talking about contamination. And we have a couple of projects in place that are taking a look at both the system as a whole. So I think we've talked to you a little bit about the regional system study, taking a look at the entirety of our system and all of the characteristics that play into how our system functions and how it will function for the next 20 years, and setting in establishing some clear plans, including fee structures, including pricing structures, and including capital improvements and structural changes. So we can definitely provide you more of a detailed update once we're closer to getting that. It's an initiation phase right now, so once we get closer to having a final agreement in place, we can come and talk to you a little bit more about those plans and what specifically we're looking at. As far as contamination goes, one of the levels of contamination that that we'll be working on, and after the Recycled Arts Fest, we'll be working, this is Jill in her role as Environmental Outreach Specialist in the Green Neighbors Program, we'll be working on an outreach focusing on contamination. So looking at a set of at the curb, which is materials that shouldn't be in the recycling bin that are going into the recycling bin for a variety of reasons that we want to try and take a look at and solve. So that'll be a large public outreach piece. As far as the contamination that we get, we just did what we call a residue study at the transfer station, where at the MRF, the material recovery facility, which is all of the stuff that goes into the beginning of that system. At the end of that system, it's all kicked out into different piles, which are then sent off to different places. And then there's also what we call residuals or contamination, which are things that either for some reason were not processable because of their size, or for example, paper was contaminated with food, or broken pieces of plastic that got sorted into the wrong containers. So there's some structural technology and processing changes that Waste Connection is putting into place, including slowing down the speed so that all of the folks and the machines on the line have more time to remove that contamination. Waste Connections is still successfully moving all of our products. In fact, I don't believe, and I think Derek talked to it a little bit last time, when he was here, but nothing is going to China right now. We're finding alternative markets, including an increase in domestic markets. And the region as a whole, including Metro and the Pacific Northwest, are looking at other options for bringing in more domestic markets now that China is not as appealing or as accessible a market for these materials. So there's a little bit of growing pains in the sense that we're settling into a new norm in the region, and that we're all looking at solving the same problem. So there's a large collaborative effort going on. I'm trying to figure out how to do that. So I'm just rambling now, but I think we can yeah. bring some more information to you. We're not looking at immediate rate increases. We're not seeing the revenue right. from recyclables that we were seeing in big boom years. We're at a low, and I think it's going to be the new norm that recyclables are just, if we want them to be truly recycled, that this kind of it's forcing the entire recycling market to take a really hard look at how we've been doing things and how we need to change moving forward. So it seems to be some growing pains.
And I think to some extent, I know where the conversation was coming from the counties, is that to some degree as public health, we as a board, we set policy for environmental health. And, you know, I love Waste Connections. They're a great partner, but Waste Connections do not set public policy. We do that. So I don't want them, you know, they're a great partner, but they shouldn't be setting public policy. So, and I think in the future, you know, recycling started the conversation 50 years ago or 40 years ago, thought you were nuts, you know. Well, them policy discussions started out with a few public health people saying, hey, we should do this. And I think the way we handle garbage isn't, you know, let's just keep trucking it to, you know, Wasco pit or, you know, wherever. Calis just opened a pit up. The just continue to do that. I think we need to at least look at it.
Yeah, no, I'd be more than happy to engage in whatever conversations or kind of help get your help framing how we want to do that. I think ultimately, and the last thing I will say, at least in our program and something that we'll take a look at, is that ultimately we want recycling and garbage to go down. We want all of these. I mean, they're still discarded materials, and they're all indicators of, you know, a lot of things play into it, our economy, our health, a lot of things play into needing to be considered when we make these decisions. But ultimately, we want all discards to go down, reduce and reuse, are above recycling in that hierarchy for a reason. Those are from a public health, from an environmental, from an economy standpoint, those are the most important things in that hierarchy. And trying to figure out how they connect to all of the other priorities we have will be a really big
deal. I've seen a store in Portland selling water in a milk carton. It was a milk carton container.
Oh, the water box of... Yeah.
Box water. I don't... Maybe it's way expensive to do it, but it seems like it's kind of unique.
Why do we buy water in bottles?
I have no idea why.
I think,
take it out of the tap.
I know.
I think in any time you trade packaging options, there's always a trade-off one way. It's either a trade-off at the end of the life recyclability or at the beginning of life, it's more efficient to transport. So there's a long list of potential impacts of changing packaging on things like that. Ultimately, we want people drinking out of
and maybe that's
out of their
that's tank. What we, you know, as a public policy, maybe that's where we go to say, hey,
you know. Oh, you think so? We're going to tell people not to get bottled water? Is that
I'll let you guys,
I have a quick question about is recycling at the curb, home recycling, is it mandatory when you pay your garbage?
It varies throughout the county. I think there's no requirements to participate, but I think it's included in the rates, in so you have the service and people use it.
Whether you use it or not.
It's an incentive to not put materials. It's cheaper to have both than to have one. So
I want, if you would, while you're on the record, while you're here right now, would you, our citizens take their own personal time to sort garbage and recycle, and they're glad to do that because it's an environmentally important step. So they want to do it right, and they don't want to put anything in the recycle bin that is a contaminant. Just what is a list of four or five of the most commonly misunderstood things that end up in a recycle bin?
We just talked about this list, and you're testing me, and I'm on the record. So,
well, as one close of the, as you can.
If you're not under
oath.
No pressure.
I don't need to
fake
a heart attack or anything to get. I would say plastic film, and that is a wide range.
What is that?
So plastic film would be any thin plastic packaging materials. So that's anywhere from, and you know, it's a wide range of things that impact our system, but it's anything from large sheets of plastic that are left over after, you know, the plastic you laid on for painting projects, to the produce bags you get at the grocery store, to, so it's we use the term plastic film in regards to a lot of materials, but it's water bottle packaging, like when you buy at Costco, things that are shrink wrapped. So there's a, you know, plastic film is a large body or a large umbrella of things, and that while it may have, that's one of the bigger ones, recyclability. So I would say, your question was, so plastic film, which encompasses a lot of different things, including
reuse storage bags. Those are garbage, correct?
Reuse storage bags.
Oh. I don't want to use the name brand, so when you put your food in the refrigerator, you put it in a closing.
Oh. It's a Ziploc bag.
Thank
you. A freezer bag.
Thank you, Eileen.
Well, and that goes into one of the second biggest concerns. So
it's garbage.
Yes and a no, but it's food contamination would be one of the other ones that we have. So while a pizza box is made out of a recyclable material or certain or papers, napkins are made out of something that could be done with, that it's the food on it. So usually those things come with food in them, which then creates the problem.
Okay. Anything that has food product on it or in it is garbage.
Yeah. So when we looking at what we had been shipping to China and what they're filtering out, it's a lot of food contaminated or soiled paper products that we can't then sell, and a lot of it happens in the cart or prior to being in the cart, and plastic film would be two of the bigger ones. And then there's just things that disrupt the system. Glass is a big one, too, because glass, while accepted at the curbside, can still end up in those recycling containers for one reason or another. So glass in the curbside recycling cart is another contaminant that then leaves recyclable material unsellable because it's coated in glass or has glass in it. So,
thank you.
But we can provide a more detailed list and some of the impacts if that would be helpful. But
people want to do it right. So if you can get a list that's real simple, if Waste Connections can send it out in the bill, I mean, there are lots of ways to get this message out.
Yeah, and I think that'll be one of the things that we'll work on in our contamination is both identifying as close to the behavior as possible that it's happening, but also being very clear and targeting a couple of things.
Okay. This is a voluntary service that good citizens do, so...
So
with that respect.
Not to belabor this, but have you ever thought about asking pizza sellers to actually put that on the top of their box? Of course, I'm sure their label needs to be the largest thing, but,
yeah,
you know.
And, in fact, a lot of places now when you get pizza to go, there's additional liner in the bottom so that, like, there's, like, a second layer of paper that keeps the box. The problem is not that the... It's that usually people are throwing away half of a pizza with the box. So I know I did that a lot in college. Yeah. There's only a certain number of days you can eat pizza off the counter,
right.
And then eventually the box has to go away. So
yeah.
I'm not saying college students are responsible or that I eat old pizza.
I'm just saying
this is a recyclable package. The food and everything goes in there. So,
I tell you. You're just
in Portland, though.
Absolutely.
You're gonna make a good story.
Who would think public health could be so much fun?
Absolutely, yeah. So, but I would encourage you if you guys get a chance to come out. I think I was the one I prompted you guys getting the volunteer. So if you guys come out and at least get a chance to see the Recycled Arts Fest and you know staff a booth for a little while, then we'll feed you all the information you need to know to talk to people. So
that's very good.
So
okay.
Thank you.
Well, we beat this horse to death.
Thanks for that, Mark.
Yeah.
We'll work on getting you that, having maybe a work session or something where we talk more about solid waste down the road.
Sounds good. Okay. Thank you. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.